This is Friday, September 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming away, hundreds of refugees are marching away from Budapest looking for a country that will accept them. The European Union is trying to come up with an agreement on what to do with those looking for a new place to live. And the United States says it's looking into ways to accept more exiles, but there are problems and there is opposition.
Resettlement in a distant country for refugees should be the absolute last option when there are literally no other options available.
All of that and more lie ahead on today's International Edition. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees has called on the European Union to admit up to 200,000 refugees for what he called a mass relocation program to ease the flood of migrants appearing at EU borders looking for shelter. Antonio Guterres released a statement Friday asking the EU to implement a program that would require participation of all European Union states to help refugees with a valid need for protection. There is what seems to be some in-battling among members of the European Union in light of this refugee or migrant crisis. International Edition's Jeffrey Young is here to talk about something called the Dublin Regulation or the Dublin Measure. What's that all about, Jeffrey?
Ira, this is a rule within the European Union that says when a refugee arrives in the European Union seeking asylum, they are to register in the first EU country in which they step foot. Now, in the case of what's been going on in recent time, that would be Italy and that would be Greece. However, both of those countries have not been registering the refugees on their own soil. They've been pushing them northward to other countries.
So why isn't the EU doing something about this? There have been called for meetings. They're supposed to meet on the 14th, I believe, and come up with something. Do you think they might try to enforce this? And can they enforce this?
I brought this up with senior fellow Anders Osland at the Atlantic Council. And he looks at the Dublin regulation and doesn't see anything that's workable at this point.
No, it's not workable and it cannot be enforced and it's unrealistic. The number of political refugees coming to Europe now is over 100,000 a month. Europe has no possibilities of managing this in the current system. It completely needs to rethink its policy. It needs to have a Middle East policy. It doesn't. It needs to have a military force that can intervene where necessary. It doesn't. It needs to provide humanitarian assistance outside of Europe. It barely does that. And it needs to have a system for distributing the migrants. It doesn't have that. And instead, we are seeing that a few countries are being overrun by political refugees. You can take Sweden, that has, for the last several years, taken about 1% of its population in political refugees. Now Germany is the main address of these people. Greece has been completely flooded with illegal immigrants from for years, and now Hungary has become the focal point. Nothing in the system works.
In recent days, a Hungarian official has said repeatedly that they must register in the first country they land, i.e., many of them, Greece. This man is talking about something that simply cannot happen.
Well, what is happening now is that the East Europeans are dead frightened of all these refugees. They have their own ethnic problems, and the West Europeans have already got such large numbers of economic or political immigrants. So Europe is in panic, lost, and everybody just trying to push the problem to others.
We do have the EU Interior and Justice Ministers meeting on the 14th of September. Do you have any optimism that something constructive can come out of that?
No. What needs here is a full-fledged foreign policy strategy, and Europe is not prepared to think of it. What we are seeing now in the discussion is how can we push the political refugees to other countries, and this is a mess that is likely to get worse.
As Anders Osland at the Atlantic Council brings up, they have to forge a common agreement and they have to stick to it. Otherwise, nothing is going to work.
Now, you notice that I tried to refer to it as a refugee crisis rather than a migrant crisis. Now, that has engendered a lot of talk, not only in our newsroom at the Voice of America, but throughout the world, I am sure. But what is your feeling? Is it a refugee crisis or is it a migrant crisis?
From covering this story in depth, I strongly see this as a refugee crisis. The overwhelming majority of the people that are arriving on the doorstep of the European Union are people fleeing conflict, the conflict, the civil war in Syria, the Islamic State and its push into Syria and northern Iraq, the conflicts in Africa that are driving people northward. There's a small number of economic migrants, people looking for job opportunities, but the overwhelming number of these people are refugees seeking asylum because back home, it's a death trap.
International Edition's Jeffrey Young. Thanks as always, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Ira.
Well, let's bring you up to date on exactly what's happening as far as the migrant story or the refugee story, if you will. Hundreds of frustrated migrants are now marching out of Budapest. They're vowing to reach the Austrian border by foot after Hungarian authorities blocked them from taking any westbound trains. Carrying bags and backpacks, they snake through Budapest in a line nearly half a mile long, hampering traffic at times as they begin their 171-kilometer journey to Austria. We will keep you up to date on what's happening there. And as we continue on International Edition, we'll talk with people on both sides of the question of what role the United States should be playing in the refugee crisis that's now engulfing much of Europe. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Have you ever wondered how many trees there are in the world? A new study led by Yale University has an answer. More than 3 trillion. The study also estimates that the number of Earth's trees has dropped by about 46% since the beginning of human civilization. To make their findings, the researchers used a combination of tools such as satellite imagery, forest inventories, and supercomputers. These technologies allowed them to chart the more than 3 trillion trees throughout the world, right down to the square kilometer level. 2 years ago, using only estimates and satellite imagery, it was thought that there were just 400 billion trees worldwide. Among the benefits provided by trees include their ability to store enormous amounts of carbon and that they are vital for the cycling of the Earth's nutrients, water, and air. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Ira Melman. The State Department said yesterday that the U.S. had stepped up efforts to process Syrian refugees seeking admission to the United States. A spokesman for the State Department, Mark Toner, said the total number of Syrian refugees admitted to the U.S. since the start of the country's crisis in 2011 was expected to reach about 1,800 by the end of October. He said one of the U.S. challenges for admitting migrants from countries such as Syria and the U.S. Is the U.S. Review process.
It's an extensive review process. Certainly, folks coming from that part of the world, that region, we need to obviously conduct a thorough review process. I've been told it takes anywhere up to 18 to 24 months.
And added that there are a lot of terrorist groups operating in that region, meaning Syria, that part of the world, said Toner. We need to make sure that we fundamentally protect the national security of the United States. Joining us now is Mark Krikorian. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington. Mark, where do you stand on this?
Well, there's two questions. The broader one is whether we should be taking in more immigrants from abroad, period, and my answer to that is no. But specifically on the question of admitting refugees from Syria or really from anywhere in the Islamic world, my answer is, again, generally speaking, no. Resettlement in a distant country for refugees should be the absolute last option when there are literally no other options available. The thing is, of course, that right next to Syria and Iraq, which is another source of refugees, are a number of very large, very wealthy, very empty countries, namely Saudi Arabia and smaller ones that are also very wealthy, the Gulf states, Kuwait, Qatar, etc. And, you know, these are places where they speak the same language, they're culturally similar, they're right nearby so that returning home, if and when things stabilize, is more feasible. And yet those countries refuse to take any refugees at all, zero. And so it is not our responsibility to resettle people from the Middle East when there are available Middle Eastern countries that simply refuse to do their part.
I'm quoting IRC president, David Miliband, here. The International Rescue Committee is saying the U.S. has historically been a world leader in recognizing the moral obligation to resettle refugees. What about that?
There is no such moral responsibility. This really is only a story about 40 years old following the Vietnam War. And our responsibility with refugees from Indochina, from the Vietnam War, specifically relates to the fact that we were involved there. I mean, that we took in a lot of Hmong refugees from Laos because those people were fighting on our side. And when we lost and they lost, the communists began a campaign of extermination, a genocidal campaign of extermination. And so we kind of did have to take them. There was a moral obligation, but it wasn't a generic one to refugees. It was to people that we had a specific and particular responsibility to, in the same way that France, after the Algeria War, took specific Algerians who had fought for them and who would have been killed if they had not been evacuated to France. That's a very different thing from a general responsibility that these groups claim that we're supposed to take refugees. That response, such a responsibility simply doesn't exist.
Mark Krikorian is executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington. Mark, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's that side of the story. There is pressure on the United States to take some responsibility for the refugees' resettlement. VOA's Pete Heinlein talks with Bob Kitchen. He is the director of the aforementioned International Rescue Committee. He is in charge of the Emergency Response Division.
Bob, I'd like to ask you, what is the IRC recommending that other countries do? For instance, the United States.
We're recommending that this is the outcome of 5 years of ignoring the Syria war. We're recommending that we do our part to look after the many millions that have fled the war, resettle them within Europe and to the U.S. as well. We have to do our part to make sure that folks are safe away from this war. We're also recommending that we have to take more targeted and focused action to bring peace to Syria. The long-term solution here for the 4.1 million refugees is not resettlement. Many of them, the vast majority of them, just want to go home to a safe Syria. So first and foremost, we need to start working again to bring about peace to the country.
The State Department is saying that the United States has stepped up efforts to process Syrian refugees that are seeking admission to the United States. To what extent is this the United States and Western Europe's problem?
It's all of our problems. With 4.1 million people forced to flee from their homes under the threat of barrel bombing and chemical attacks, the U.S. has done some over the last year. They've moving to admit just over 1,000 Syrian refugees, which is a small, minute fraction of the number that need to come in. As an organization, the IRC is urging the U.S. government to bring in 65,000, which is a more meaningful number and manageable given the resettlement system that's in place in the U.S.
Some would argue that the problem is already bigger than we can handle and that bringing them in encourages more to come.
Yeah, and that's why I've said, and I'll repeat, that we need to treat this problem at the source. The problem that many millions of people face is that they don't have safety in their own country. They're facing ISIS, they're facing the regime, and we need to work to bring about solutions for peace there. And in the interim, we need to make sure that we're contributing fairly to the cost of sustaining their lives in the neighboring countries, Lebanon and Jordan and Turkey and Iraq, who have so far struggled themselves to be able to sustain the 4.1 million refugees. If Lebanon and Jordan and Turkey can do this, so can Europe.
Thank you, Bob. That was Bob Kitchen of the International Rescue Committee, who's just returned from the front lines where refugees are arriving daily from Syria and other countries.
Thank you very much. International Edition's Pete Heinlein. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. World financial markets have seen turmoil over the past few weeks, with many blaming China for this shakeup. We welcome to International Edition Austin Goolsbee, professor of economics at the prestigious Booth School of Business at the University of Chicago and the past chairman of the U.S. Council of Economic Advisors, one of the chief economic counselors to President Barack Obama. Austin, thanks for being with us. This market turmoil seems to have died down at least a bit over the past few days. Do you see any more surprises from China or anywhere else for that matter?
Yeah, I'm worried about what the situation is in China. You know, they have gone to great lengths to try to not reveal the information, and wherever we've had information content, if you want to think of it that way, in the stock markets or in other markets, the government has tried to kind of erase a lot of the information you could get from the official statistics. So I'm quite nervous that they're potentially on the cusp of some at least 1997 like Asian financial crisis event, if not a 2008 style U.S. event in China. What, if that were to happen, I think that the world would likely go back into recession.
What would that incur? What might they do to have that happen?
Well, basically, what would happen is if the drop in stock values. Certainly, if it corresponds with a big drop in property values, which it may be corresponding to, and that led to major indebtedness problems and a big credit crunch, then I think you would be in the kind of negative scenario that I fear. Now, hopefully, the debt is not as great as some of the pessimists worry about, but if it is. We learned in 2008 in the U.S., that's a tough, tough water slide to climb back up if you start sliding down.
Do you think that the Chinese are interested in the international financial scene, or just basically what's happening inside their borders?
Well, most everybody's just interested in what's happening in their own borders, but that doesn't mean that it's not tied to that. The reason I use 2008 as a comparison is the 2008 event was started by a bubble and a lot of debt in the United States. And that's where the downturn was the worst. That's where the financial crisis was the worst. And this has the potential to be the same but centered in China. And in the U.S., and in Europe and in the rest of the emerging markets, they would clearly be affected. And you've already seen that, you know, in their stock markets, in the price of oil, the price of various commodities. But I think in China, they would mostly be concerned with how bad it would be just for their domestic economy.
On an international scene, what effect then has these problems in the Chinese economy had on the United States and then as well as other economies around the world?
Well, nothing good. I mean, that's for sure. There is a group in the United States that tends to say, well, you know, the U.S. economy is only 15% exports and China's only some share of that export. So the direct impact of even a substantial slowdown in China maybe wouldn't be that bad on the U.S. economy. I think that's unrealistic because what we've seen in the stock market, that same logic would say that when stocks plunge in China, it shouldn't really have that much of an impact on the U.S. market. And yet it does because it freaks people out. You know, a lot of big companies are going to slow down their investment, slow down their R&D spending and things like that. If they think that the world might be going back into recession. I just remain deeply uneasy about this situation. Hopefully I'm wrong, but I remain uneasy about it.
Austin Goolsbee is professor of economics at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business, past chairman of the U.S. Council of Economic Advisors. Austin, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, Ira, thanks for having me on.
And let's give you this addendum. The U.S. unemployment rate fell to a 7-year low in August as employers added only a modest 173,000 jobs. Key piece of evidence for the Federal Reserve in deciding whether to raise interest rates from record lows later this month. Though hiring in August was the slowest in 5 months, the government revised up job growth for June and July by a combined 44,000. So it remains to be seen whether or not the Fed does do anything as far as interest rates are concerned. That is our program. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. Thanks for being with us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a further sign of the United States' determination to help the nations of Africa combat terrorism, millions of dollars in rewards are being offered for information on 3 more leaders of the Al-Qaeda-linked Somalia-based terrorist organization Harakat Shabab al-Mujahideen, or Al-Shabaab. The men are Yasin Kilwe, Abdikader Mohammed Abdikader, also known as Ikrima, and Jafar, also known as Ammar. The group, listed as a foreign terrorist organization since 2008, has control of large areas of southern and central Somalia and is responsible for the death of thousands of Somali citizens, peace activists, international aid workers, journalists, and civilians, as well as African Union peacekeepers who are helping to restore stability and prosperity to the region. Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes amid the fighting. Since 2006, Al-Shabaab has engaged in a campaign of violence, including bombings and suicide attacks, which has killed thousands. In July 2010, it planned and executed a bomb attack in Kampala, Uganda, that killed more than 70 people, including an American citizen. Yasin Kilwe is Al-Shabaab's leader in the Puntland region of Somalia. He pledged his allegiance to Al-Qaeda in February 2012. Abdikader, 34 years old, was born in Kenya of Somali parents. He has coordinated recruitment of Kenyan youth into Al-Shabaab and commanded a force of Kenyan fighters operating in Somalia. He reportedly has medium-length hair, a thick mustache, and is missing 3 fingers on his left hand. Jafar has served as Abdikader's deputy and reportedly is missing 1 eye. If you have information on any of these men, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy. Submit a tip through the RFJ website at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to info@rewardsforjustice.net. The United States guarantees that all credible reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the United States is prepared to protect informants by relocating them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.